The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 413, recorded on February 15th, 2016. To the 413th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast, the 246th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, yeah, we've had some really cold... Well, I've had some really cold weather, and these two have had really warm weather. The fortunate thing is that next week it's going to be in the 50s, so global warming will start again. We won't have the Arctic literally coming into our backyards. And that's basically what happened to us. The Arctic just decided to visit. It's like, it just shifted and said, hello, guys, I'm the Arctic. You want to feel what negative 20 wind chill feels like?
Coming out of Kansas City and moving to Texas, I'm happy to be done with that forever.
I don't like snow either. It's a real hassle to deal with.
I don't mind snow. It's snowing here today, and it's great.
Yeah, but then you have to shovel it, then you have to drive on it.
Oh, I live in New York City. We don't do those sorts of things. The city does it for us. We don't worry about that.
You mean you have socialistic people doing things for you? I'm baffled.
You know, actually, I was recording parts for my TV show with the snow as the background. It's a great visual to be on the streets of New York while it's snowing. So. Mm-hmm. That's on Thursdays, Channel 65 in New York City. Or you can just go to MNN.org and watch Channel 4. Thursdays, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard. I'll have a new episode. Well, actually, this coming episode is a rerun. But next week's episode is going to be a new one. So I no longer do my show live. Just unfortunate. You know, I should have had the foresight to do this show live on TV. They'll have that great visual of me... With a headset, talking to two disembodied voices. That's great TV right there. And I could expand my show to 1 hour because it would be kind of hard to do this podcast in 30 minutes, or 28 minutes, actually.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I could always post it on YouTube and get a couple of pennies for licensing it, since I wouldn't be using any visuals. That's the thing that's going to be screwed up. I'm going to try and put this episode, the episode that I'm recording, that's going to be airing next week, on YouTube, and hope that people at Konami don't try to claim licensing, you know, even though it's fair use.
Yeah.
I mean, I already made the fair use agreement with YouTube, but they don't care. They're too big and massive. I think we already had this argument, didn't we? Didn't we talk about this?
Possibly.
In the last 2 weeks about Google
fair
just...
Fair use.
Yeah, oh no, it was about Doug Walker and Nostalgia Critic and Channel Awesome. I think they were the ones who were shut down for 3 weeks because until people started complaining and YouTube finally noticed there were 300,000 people complaining. Yeah, it takes 300,000 people to complain on your behalf for them to do anything. They're not exactly the most transparent company.
Yeah, YouTube. I feel like YouTube's been kind of messing up a lot lately with that.
You know, and that's why... losing Blip TV was such a huge blow.
Yeah.
There is another streaming service. I forgot the name. I think it's Vox. So I'm going to investigate that. So I'll post on YouTube and Vox. And if people try to claim the license on YouTube, I'll just shut it off and delete it and just say, go to Vox and watch it here on Vox instead. You know, I have a blog spot. It has two posts. One from 2012 and the other one... from 2015 when I noticed that I had a blog spot. And I said, oh, I have a blog spot. I'm going to post something here soon, I promise. Because the first post was, I'm going to post something here soon, I promise. So I've been a liar. I've been a dirty liar, and whoever's visited that blog spot for the past 6 years or whatever, how many years, I've been a dirty liar. Yeah, that site's going to get hits. You want to visit, it's jonahfalcon.blogspot.com. See, the loneliest blog spot in the world. I think I should rename the entire blog spot that. The loneliest blog spot in the world. I don't know. Anyways, so what have you been playing, TJ?
This last weekend, I did something for a review. It was Layers of Fear. which is billed as a psychological horror. It comes from the Blooper Team. They're an indie developer. They haven't done too much, but it basically takes you into the role of this painter who is trying to create this magnum opus, and he has this family. Well, you find out in the first moments that he had a family, and they're mysteriously absent, and it just takes you in this psychological sort of roller coaster of horrible events.
It reminds me of what was the name of that game that was supposed – that was a spiritual successor to Silent Hill? It was just two letters, PT. It's like PT with paint.
Yeah, like, and it just – it literally, like I wrote on it, it was a.
Well, it was out in October, August of 2015. No one paid attention to it until now.
It's like Edgar Allan Poe. Like there's horror, but the bigger part of it, I think, in my opinion, is that it's imagery that this grotesque imagery that bends around an actual like horrible human tragedy, and that's my favorite part of Edgar Allan Poe. So I really loved the game.
Have you played any conventional games lately?
Well, you know, I'm still carrying the torch for Rainbow Six Siege, despite the fact that people are complaining and it's still buggy. I don't know. I still like that game.
Yeah. So how about you, Scott?
I've been playing Minecraft and Civ.
What a surprise. I mean, everybody who's listened to this podcast, at least 2 weeks. Okay, have you played anything besides Minecraft and Civ? Did you do any polycasts?
Yeah. Well, we did Termcast anyways when we do our Saturday night games. So there is that.
I sometimes do them.
I'm taking a break from Fallout 4. I'm going to I got stuck on King's Quest 2, and so, I mean, yeah, the second chapter of King's Quest, so I'll have to go back to that, and there's some other games I'm going to go back to.
Why are you stuck? Is it difficult?
Well, I don't know. I'm just stuck. I don't know what to do next. It's one of those moments.
Is King's Quest 2 one of the old-time adventure games in which you get killed? You can get killed.
No, I'm talking about the second chapter of the current King's Quest game.
Yes, I mean, is this the sort of game in which you can get killed?
Not really, no. It's like a you restart if you do something like that. It's like, that's not how it happened, and he puts you right back, basically.
Okay. Well, so you
don't really die, not really. No.
Well, here's the thing: having to load your game or having to restart, that's dying. You know, I mean,
No. So you don't get it. You don't restart. You go back like 2 seconds or so before your choice. That's not dying. Dying is. You played an hour, you died, and you go all the way back to the beginning.
No, but adventure games don't let you. They'll just say, I don't think that's a good idea, and they won't do it.
And
you know, like in Grim Fandango, I mean,
there's a huge difference between, you know, oopsie, you're not going to do that, and then so you go the other way, and, you know, you've lost, like, hours of gameplay because you forgot to save. And you die to something stupid that you didn't even think would kill you, you know, where there's death around every freaking corner. Yeah. You know, they stop doing that in games.
Well, it literally plays out in the way of, like, the narrator's like, and then he was killed by wolves. Just kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, like, Prince of Persia, people complained, the reboot from 2009, people complained, hey, wait a minute, you can't die, and she saves you? That's not... Yeah, it's the same thing as reloading your game and starting over again from that point anyway. You know, all the King's Quest games let you rewind time anyway, so there's no big deal about it.
It is if you didn't save... people complained anyways because some of the deaths were really stupid and unexpected, and they didn't even realize they should be saving, and so they'd have to do this, like, paranoid save every, like, 5 minutes or something.
You call that save scumming, folks.
That's crazy. No, it's not save scumming. Save scumming is when you are trying to reload a RNG outcome. If you're rolling the dice and you got a bad roll, so you reload that. Reloading, like, you were walking down a path and you're supposed to, like, type something or this, you know, monster comes out and takes your head off. That's not saves coming. That's because you messed up and you have to go back. You're given no choice.
Yeah, those games did teach you to save all the time, but that was kind of my favorite thing about the Sierra games.
You
see, there was
Tron 2.0 had one character, before you do the giant wall of creeping doom, he tells you, you know, I'm saving every 30 seconds, and I suggest you do the same.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, well, save scumming is what you do in XCOM 2 a lot. I'm not a coward. I'm not a coward. It's just that when I see someone 2 feet away from me on a 90% chance, there's nothing in between us, and I miss because he's just so awesome that he's not allowed to be hit.
There was a screenshot I saw recently that was probably one of the funniest things I've seen about XCOM 2. It was literally a guy with the gun barrel literally on a sectoid's mouth.
Oh, I saw that.
And the hit percentage is like 75%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can easily imagine my... You know what? Someone has to do this. Someone has to make a mod for XCOM 2 in which all your people are dressed like stormtroopers. So it'll be easier to say, oh yeah, well, look who's trying to fire at them. 90%, sorry you miss, even though you're right next to them and you're right in front of them. And, you know. And the thing is that you'll always get the same result over and over and over again. It's predetermined. You know, that's why in XCOM they actually had something in which you can click a button so it does a random number, so that at least it'll do a different result if you quit and load again. And a lot of people have been complaining, and I realized something: the easy on XCOM 2 is actually normal. Normal difficulty is easy on XCOM 2.
I have been playing Animal Crossing lately. I went back to my little town after like a year of it being abandoned.
Was it a desolate town and everybody, like one of those creepypastas, you come back years later and it's like everybody's killed themselves?
My guys were still there. Most of them were still there.
Were they angry with you?
But, yeah, actually they were like, where have you been? It's been like a year. And there was weeds everywhere that I had to clean up.
I have my Big Brain Academy. Yeah. And I haven't done it for 5 or 6 years. I want to see what happens when I go into that game again and say, hi, I'm back. Yeah. Anything change on my DS? I don't know if I have Animal Crossing on DS. I did. I don't know if I still do.
Mm.
It'll be interesting. Oh, Brain Age will probably be pissy at me. Brain Age was angry with you when you missed 24 hours. They say, what have you been doing? You're supposed to do this daily. I want to see what happens if I come back 8 years later. It's like, is your brain age 93? Why are you coming back? Why are you coming back now?
No idea.
I'm not a fan of games that have obligations for me.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, well, actually, you know, I haven't realized this, but you know, one of the achievements of Stanley Parable is that you don't play for like 3 or 5 years. So I guess I'm doing that. I'm doing that achievement. Wow. Not playing Stanley Parable. I have to check the achievement list for Stanley Parable now, because I'm pretty sure it's something ridiculous. Let's see. The achievement list of... I have 6 locked achievements. Let me see. One of them is like, it has you doing all this wild stuff, and it's like, hey, why are you doing it? Achievement. This is an achievement. That doesn't help me. Play the Stanley Parable for an entire duration of a Tuesday. I'm not doing that. Oh, here it is. Don't play the Stanley Parable for 5 years. Let me see. I haven't played the Stanley Parable in how long? Let me see. Since November 30th, 2013. So I still have 2 more years to go.
Oh, my God. Really? I can't believe that's an achievement. That's funny.
Yeah.
Those guys make bizarre games.
Very.
I haven't played the sequel, or at least the spiritual sequel that he did about this. What happens is that game, I forgot the name of the game, but it's a computer, and you just click through the folders, and you learn a story about whoever's computer this is, and it's the creator's. And I guessed it correctly. The creator was semi-suicidal, and so when you go through his folders, you get that hint that he's not too happy. He's subtly unhappy.
So, there's also Dr. Languskov and the ridiculously long title.
Yeah, you also have Everett McMullen, the guy who did Team Meat, said that video game development was his cure for suicidal feelings, which will probably tell you why the Binding of Isaac is so damn depressing.
That's a weird game.
Yeah, I still haven't played it. I mean, I've had it on there. It's one of those games I keep on intending. It's just an action RPG, right? And everybody talks about how amazing it is, you know, how you unlock all this stuff, and, you know, you can unlock this type of character and this type of character and that type of character, you know, and I just haven't gotten around to The Binding of Isaac.
It's not my kind of art style. The whole thing kind of looks like a Newgrounds Flash, and I get that some people love that, but it's just
It looks like the Behemoth, really, to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I still haven't played any Behemoth games aside from Castle Crashers, and even that, I only played the demo. I heard that Alien Hominid is the toughest game in the world to play. One of the toughest. Yeah. Anyways, so what have I been playing? I've been playing XCOM 2, The thing is that I think I've gotten beyond the incredible bugginess of it. I don't know what happened. I don't think there was a stealth update. I don't know. For some reason, now it's not crashing. The save games aren't corrupt, forcing me to play an entire mission over again, which sucks. I have now gotten my guys up to power armor, which is really, really cool. Power armor. I'm about to get the plasma weaponry. I did get it last time, but the problem is that I played the game sort of incorrectly, so I could see that, yeah, the Avatar project's going to be finished no matter what I do, so I have to start it over. I don't want to have to see what happens when you let the Avatar project finish. So right now, I'm playing XCOM, and the Avatar project progress is now 1. So, and, you know, I've been very good, you know, and I found there is a game-breaking combination for the Ranger, they're the people with the swords.
Uh-huh.
So you get one type of skill that if anybody gets near you, you slice them with a sword. You get another skill in which if you kill someone, the first person to attack you automatically misses no matter who it is. Then you get the Reaper skill, which says if you kill someone with your sword, you get to go again. So, sure. Yeah, so you just buzzsaw through all these people, make sure that the last person you are is easily killable, and you're right next to a sectopod, and it blasts you with a blast that would normally take 15 hit points, and it says, nope, failed, because they're untouchable. And there's nothing better than your sniper killing one of the really big enemies, like a sectopod or that round thing, with one hit, because he has a mod, the loader, which gives him a 10% chance of killing whatever he shoots at with just one bullet. And it's really satisfying when that happens.
He has one like that. The sharpshooters have something like that too, where if they kill an enemy with a shot, they get
to go again. Yeah, that's Serial. That's his top power. So like I said, you know, I'm playing it on easy simply because I want to get familiar with the mechanics. But the thing is, on easy, it's like playing XCOM, the first XCOM on normal.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if Firaxis heard people saying, oh, XCOM is a piece of cake. It's easy as hell. And they're saying, oh, yeah?
That's exactly what happened, is that people said beyond the enemy unknown was too easy, and they're like, oh, okay. All right.
The people who did the long mod, I'm pretty sure the long war mod said, you know what? We'll help you make it harder. I still haven't played the long war. I don't think I will, because, you know, I have gotten past it. I completed XCOM, you know, and it was like, oh, that was a great story. But it always felt to me, it wasn't that it wasn't too easy, it felt to me too short.
Yeah.
It just felt too short, you know. This game, at least, it's a longer game. And I can see where it's going. And, you know, I'm going to be sad when it's over. Because I guess I can play it on normal next. But, you know. But I'm getting attached to characters that I have already, obviously. You know, I know that you're super attached to your characters, TJ. You go through heaven and hell to make them individuals.
Have you written detailed biographies for them yet?
No. But I did, you know.
There are character limits, by the way.
Here's the thing, is that my ranger, I made Japanese, a Japanese woman. And she runs around in this black suit. Before I had her wearing eye black, you know, but now she just has hair. Because when she got her power armor, she decided to stop with the half mohawk and go with regular hair. And now, you know, it's like she's a badass swordsman just slicing everything up. I have another ranger as well. So that, what's it called? They sometimes go off together and do stuff. There's nothing more satisfying, by the way, than taking control of a sectopod. And saying, hi, guys! They fire 3 times, too, you know. And I can always imagine what the Advent are thinking when this gigantic, which is basically the XCOM equivalent of a Strider from Half-Life, turns around and says, hey, guess what? I'm on their side now, and now you die.
That's a similar thing with the support class, where the ones that have the gremlins. I got my guy up to the point where he can hack the Advent mechs, and yeah, there is nothing about funner than hacking an Advent mech.
Well, that's it. Hacking a Sectopod. That's the giant mech.
Oh yeah, the white mech in the middle of a bunch of his buddies and just firing off his rocket pod straight at the ceiling of a building.
Yeah, and they do their job for you by killing him for you.
Yeah,
because they're forced to attack it, you know. So, anyways, the Rangers are broken, and I hope they don't fix them. So, anyways, we're going to move on to our first news item. Why don't you take it away, Scott?
The Chinese Room gearing up to announce a new game from Twitter. The Chinese Room, best known for such titles as Dear Esther, Amnesia, A Machine for Pigs, and Everyone's Gone to the Rapture, has revealed that they'll be announcing a new game soon. In a series of tweets, the developer wrote, "We're gearing up towards releasing info about our new game in the next couple of weeks, with the bonus that because it's not signed to a publisher, we can be pretty open about development," which raises the question, what's the kind of stuff you want to know what's the kind of stuff you want to know about how we make our games? Then we'll do our best to make that as open as we can. The other cool thing is we own the OP IP, so if you want t-shirts, special editions, vinyl, graphic novels, actual novel, let us know.
Wait a minute. Vinyl? They want to make vinyl albums? Vinyl LPs?
If they want to, and if there's enough demand for it, you know.
Yes.
Then they're saying stay tuned for game reveal in the next few weeks. I don't know why this isn't on a website somewhere. I don't find Twitter to be a really good communication device, but
directly from developers.
It's just that, like, the tweet. If I go look for these tweets, it's going to take me an hour to look for them. I'm sure they're already lost in a deluge of more tweets.
No, you just look
tweets
at the Chinese Room developers' Twitter.
And if I tweet them,
right,
they'll
there
never respond to me. I'll be ignored as usual.
You don't have to tweet to them. You said you just wanted to see the. So anyway, have either of you played games like Dear Esther?
I've played Dear Esther. Yes.
Okay.
Amnesia was. I
hear
Amnesia.
It's one of the scariest games ever. Amnesia,
really
the first one in the sequel. And the thing is that, you know, they started an entire genre of games. The exploratory first-person adventure game with Dear Esther. Because basically it wasn't
really?
A game. It wasn't a game. You just walked around this beach and looked in caves and got information, and that was the game. You know? And that started an entire... What?
No, Dear Esther didn't seem like that. You're just walking around and just listening to a narrator go on and on and on and on, and just nothing really happened. But, I mean, it was pretty.
I mean, evolved, by the way. Now you have stuff happening, right?
Yeah.
And there's games that things happen in. Like, Everyone's Gone to the Rapture is one example. I mean, that one, there's a reason why everybody's not there. It's because they've been taken up by the Rapture.
I just would have at least liked to interact with the world I was in, because it was like I was a ghost or something. Maybe I was a ghost.
Yeah, well, that's just it. Yeah, where you're talking to ghosts. Or
well,
at least listening
Dear
to
Esther,
ghosts.
Anyways. Yeah. I meant Dear Esther, where I would look
at
stuff.
I mean, I think you're listening to ghosts in that, aren't you? You hear voices?
Yeah, you hear a voice, but I don't know who it is, and so I don't know. But, you know, you just seem to just keep going, you know. But it was a pretty game. It had pretty music. It just... I didn't know if I was supposed to be doing anything, if I was like a story or just... This is this guy just rambling, you know? I don't know. It just would have been interesting if, like, I was investigating something, or, like, even my own death would have been interesting or something. It just... I just couldn't see the point.
Well, you know, it's just missed without the puzzles. That's all.
Yeah, which really
or
seems
seventh
like a
guest.
Shame, because that's why I like Myst. You had the puzzles.
I have the soundtrack to Myst 3.
Cool.
And you know who did it? He did the soundtrack to Myst 3? It was Jack Wall. And for those of you who don't know who Jack Wall is, he's also best known right now for doing the Mass Effect music.
Nice.
Yeah. So, TJ?
I mean, They just did a Machine for Pigs, right? They didn't do the Dark Descent.
They combined with they didn't do the first Amnesia. They collaborated with the guy who did Amnesia and did a Machine for Pigs.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I like that they're going to be communicating with the community at large about, you know, developing their games. I think we've been seeing that more lately, like with Mojang and Minecraft, for example. And I just think they should set up a website for this and not just Twitter. That's all I meant earlier.
Yeah, I mean, even like look at like Red Barrels. They had the website set up for Outlast 2, and we don't even know, like, we only have a couple teasers for that, but there's a website for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I kind of agree with Scott on that. Is that it, Twitter is great, but it can kind of get lost in the BS, to say the least.
I mean, there are some games that are coming out, like Project Aaliyah and Empathy. Oh, and one of the best, most depressing games ever to be released is another exploration type game, and that's that Dragon Cancer.
Oh, that God. Was
the trailer will make you depressed.
Wow,
I played through that entire game.
Really? Did you review it?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I remember because you actually did. Yeah, you did. I can see your review right here, and you actually wrote the news item about it.
It was one of the most powerful games I've ever played.
Powerful equals depressing.
Certainly not for everybody. Certainly a niche sort of thing, but definitely unique.
But, you know, this gets back to the people I was talking about, like Edward McMullen, who do games as self-therapy. I mean, the developers of this... Now, for those of you who don't know what That Dragon Cancer is about, it's all about a child... he's a toddler, I know, but you just follow him growing up as...
I think I get the metaphor that cancer is a dragon, and it's, you know, they're trying to deal with it.
The story is that the Green family had a child that was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and that dragon cancer is a symbolic journey through the life and tragedy and hope of... like trying to save this child and the eventual unfortunate death of the child. It's all based on the reality of what happened, and that's kind of what makes it incredible and at the same time so difficult to take on.
It's the feel good game of 2016.
Feel good. I forgot the little girl that had cancer, and she was on YouTube like really. She was like showing her struggle on YouTube, trying to deal with cancer. And I think her name was
Talia.
Girl
or there's a teenage girl too.
Little girl, like I don't know, 6 or 8 or something. And you know, she had her head shaved, and she would do videos about makeup and all sorts of little stuff, and just living her life, even though she had this cancer to deal with. And unfortunately, she passed away.
It's a little more poignant with a toddler, though, because they don't quite understand what's going on to them, right? And, you know, and everybody knows what's going on, but they don't know, really, what's going on. And it's still all abstract at that age. And, you know, so I guess it's better than being stillborn. I mean, you know, having a little bit of life rather than no life whatsoever. But, you know, so Joel, who's the name of the child, passed away 2 years ago.
And when you play, for me, when I was playing through that game, you never got the feeling that they were, there's anger, there's bitterness, there's how could this happen to us, but at the same time,
it's more exploring what he's going through, not what they're going through.
Yeah. And there's also that exploration of, like, yes, we had a child that had cancer, but would we give it up? No, of course not.
I think they have other kids, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Oh, okay. You know, imagine how it is for the siblings.
Yeah.
You know, Phil K. Dick found out that he had a twin sister who died. And he kept on, what's it called? And the weird thing was, he kept on fantasizing about having a twin sister. And then he found out he actually did have a twin sister. It's really, you know, of course, Philip K. Dick was really, 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 really strange. I mean, drugs and, I don't know, having some sort of mental disease, high-level autism that just made him wackadoo, you know. How did I get into Philip K. Dick all of a sudden?
I don't know. You brought it up.
I guess the thing is that, you know, I imagine it's even harder for siblings than it is for parents.
Right.
I think that was the entire
point. It's hard on everyone.
We went a long way from the Chinese room.
Well, we're all talking about exploratory.
There wasn't much there, honestly.
No, well, here's the thing is that, you know, these games, they're all about emotions, you know. They don't have any, quote-unquote, gameplay.
Right.
I mean, the ones that are coming out have more gameplay, more things to explore, more things to discover. I mean, when you had Dear Esther, all it was just lights and whispering, if I remember correctly. Now it's interaction, finding out the story from within. It's sort of like, here's the thing, Half-Life and Half-Life 2, Half-Life really, Half-Life was that equivalent of an FPS. Yes, you had the action, but most of it was exploring and discovering the story in the level itself without actually being told to you. You know? It told you nothing. The game, right. I mean, there was no exposition. You just found out what was going on as you went through the game. As a matter of fact, it was the infamous day one version of Half-Life had you going through his entire workday. I mean, you still have some of that in the beginning of Half-Life when you're in the tram, you go around. The day one edition was even longer before it actually got into the action. And these just take away all the gameplay elements and just have it that, you know, being in that environment, figuring out the story of what's going on through osmosis. You're not being told what's happening. No one's telling you, oh, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened. No, no, no. You have to figure it out for yourself, you know.
I wrote something about that on a while back. It was about games like that, Dragon Cancer, and to a certain extent, Amnesia and Outlast. I called them emotionally oppressive games. And
Dragon Cancer is not only emotionally oppressive, it's going to sit on your brain for several years.
And
that's why I deliberately am not playing that game. The trailer was enough.
Right. And I mentioned that, is that those games aren't for everyone. They're equivalent of, like, film noir. There's no feel-good about it.
It's not a feel-good. I mean, you feel good about the parts. You know, there's something to feel good about something like that, Dragon Cancer, in which you can get the idea, well, you know, this kid had a very short time, but he was loved, and he got to do all these things, and, you know, he got to try to live an entire lifetime in 3 years.
Right.
But, you know, it's not something nihilistic in which, like, you know, the heroine gets shot or whatever, you know.
No, and I mean, like, it's maybe that wasn't the right way to put it.
I mean, it's not talking about how bad life is. It's talking about how good life is, actually, if you think about it.
But when you think of it about it in the way of that, we always consider video games to be sort of a form of escape. And these sorts of games aren't necessarily about being put on a pedestal.
They're bringing you in and showing you stuff that you want to escape from.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, some of us really like that. You know, they like to feel like, you know, I'm not going to say it's important.
Sometimes I think people need to face demons and pain to feel better. And I think, like, a movie like Inside Out is a good example of that, dealing with depression. And that cancer dragon sounds like one of those things to help you deal with that sort of thing.
Okay, you know what? Here's the thing, Scott. After this podcast is over, watch the trailer. Everything that's in the trailer is all you need to know about the game. You don't have to play the game after watching the trailer. You know,
okay.
Playing the game will get you into the minutia and getting you all the details, but, you know, the sense of loss and all of that, you know, is right there in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know about cancer. My wife had cancer, so I know all about dealing with the struggle.
I know. This is a little different, though, because it's happening to a toddler.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can make the excuse if your grandmother gets cancer, you say, well, she had it 8 years. You know, she lived a pretty full life. You know, in this case, trying to live all... Yeah.
Like I mentioned, I think it was telling it. Maybe I'll have to look up her video or something. But there have been a number of children with cancer and... all sorts of people of all sorts of ages have gotten cancer, you know, leukemia and all Hodgkins and just...
Well, see, that's the thing, though. One of the things about this sort of thing is that we're living in a world now where you get to see those stories up close and personal. You know, usually in the past, it was in a newspaper item, it was in a made-for-TV movie, or it was in the news, you know, the television news, what's it called, a story. Now, if you want those stories, you can find them immediately, right there. And the people who are suffering, you can actually contact or at least watch their YouTube videos. So everything's a lot more close and personal. You know, it's a cliche to say the world is getting smaller, but that's exactly what's happening. The world is getting smaller, you know. Especially now that we have access to video equipment and audio equipment, and three schlubs can do a podcast that a couple of people will listen to from Indonesia and the Philippines and Russia.
You know? I would like to point out... there is a certain point of that Dragon Cancer, and it's that it doesn't necessarily put Joel Green up on a pedestal.
No.
It's merely telling Joel Green's story, and there's one of the biggest parts of that you get out of it is that there's a literal room that you go to that's just an entire room of cards and drawings and pictures from other people that had been affected by cancer that they actually took and put in the game. And that's kind of a beautiful thing, is that they're not saying our kid is the only one that mattered. They're saying this is a thing that affects everyone and we're all in this together. And I thought that was kind of a beautiful message.
That is beautiful.
Yeah. So anyways, sorry for depressing you out there. Yeah, so we're going to now go into something that's going to make at least one of the podcasters really intrigued and happy. Go ahead, TJ.
Who wouldn't want to take on Baldur's Gate 3, says former BioWare writer from Zam.com. David Gator announced his retirement from BioWare last month after nearly two decades of employment, during which time he worked on Baldur's Gate 2, Neverwinter Nights, and Knights of the Old Republic, and served as lead writer for Dragon Age Origins, eventually shaping the entire series. Now he's working as a creative director at Beamdog, the folks you might know as the Baldur's Gate Enhanced Edition people. In a recent interview with Zam, Gator speculated on the possibility of working on a Baldur's Gate 3. "I've always loved Dungeons & Dragons, and I think I've been away from it long enough that the sort of ennui that I built up is gone."
That's how you pronounce that word, is ennui.
"Ennui. That I built up is gone, and new things are rolling around in my head. Who wouldn't want to take on the challenge of being in charge of the next version of that?" While Gator's next project is not guaranteed to be Baldur's Gate...
Not guaranteed to be Baldur's Gate, which we can interpret as, it's Baldur's Gate.
"Beamdog is already working on a brand new expansion for the release of the original game. Can a true sequel really be that far behind? Pillars of Eternity proved that the classic CRPG gameplay still works in modern form, and Beamdog's own enhanced editions have proved solid updates to the original games, regardless of when or if we see a true Baldur's Gate sequel. Its spirit is well represented."
Now, Scott, you did mention that you were really looking forward to the brand new expansion to Baldur's Gate.
Yes, I think it was Attack on Dragonspear, and I am excited and intrigued that they've been hinting that that Baldur's Gate 3 is a goal, whether they have the funds and backing to, you know...
If they put this on Kickstarter, or on...
Oh, yeah.
Or actually, the other Kickstarter, not Indiegogo, but the other one that was funding...
If they did some sort of crowdfunding...
I forgot the name of it. It's three letters and a .com, and I forgot the name of it anyways. But if they put up a crowdfunding for Baldur's Gate 3, I'm pretty sure
it would make its money.
Yeah, I think it would match at least Pillars of Eternity.
Definitely, and I think I feel like playing the Vindicated song really, because it's like Pillars, Shadowrun, Wasteland, they're all bringing back the isometric RPG games, and there was a Tides of Numeria.
Wasteland, the first Wasteland was top down. It was Ultima style. I know the Wasteland 2 is isometric. How about you, TJ? What do you think?
I mean, I loved Baldur's Gate. I haven't gotten too much into the Enhanced Edition. I haven't seen what's going on with it too much, but I would love to play more of that game if they're going to make a new one.
I remember that the Baldur's Gate 2 expansion, was it had something to do with Bale? Throne of Bale? Was it throne of Baal?
Yeah, you basically were claiming the throne. You were ascending into the heavens, and you got to decide your final fate, what you wanted to do, if you wanted to become a god, or if you wanted to just walk away from it.
Well, here's why I'm unsure, because Diablo 2 had their expansion the same year, and their expansion mentioned Baal too.
Well, yeah, he's a real deity.
I'm just saying, but it's funny that these two RPGs had the same what's it called, expansion titles, more or less. And I'm trying to remember if Throne of Baal was for Baldur's Gate or if it was Diablo 2.
Throne of Baal is for Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, I remember, I didn't play it, but I remember people telling me or hearing that the Baldur's Gate 2 Throne of Baal expansion was skin-peelingly tough. It was really, really difficult.
Yeah.
So, yeah, David Gator, I will say that one of my favorite RPGs of all time, in terms of story, in terms of everything, really, is Dragon Age Origins. And I'm putting that aside from Dragon Age 2 and Dragon Age Inquisition. I'm talking about Dragon Age Origins, the first game, which is more and more of a self-contained game, you know. He can write. So, and he wrote, I don't know if he actually wrote Baldur's Gate 2. I know he, you see, here's the thing about video game writers. Sometimes they only write parts of the game. Because Star Wars The Old Republic, each of the classes were written by a separate person. And I was lucky enough to do the Sith Imperial Agent, because that had the best story of them all, you know, and that was the most enjoyable story. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, I tried to get into Baldur's Gate. I have all of it, you know, it's just a game that I never completed. I mean, I played deep enough to know some of the memes, like, go for the eyes, boo, go for the eyes, and...
yeah. I played
Jahira telling Zen, "You're amusing in the what the hell is wrong with you" kind of way.
Yeah, I liked all the characters, and especially Edwin. He was this red mage, or he was this mage of Thay, and people love using him.
Are you saying Edwin?
Edwin. Okay. Edwin.
Because Ewan is a different. One of my favorite lines from Baldur's Gate 2. Was the thing is that Savarok, who was the big bad of the first game, he was going to be the god of murder.
Yeah.
And Savarok appears as a party member in the second game. Temporarily possessed, he had Ewan's soul. And Ewan said, "What was it like, you know, having a bit of me in you?" And he had some hilarious statement about him all of a sudden worrying about blemishes or pimples or something like that. And
Imowen is the one you're thinking of.
Yeah, I mean,
Eowyn is from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, Imowen. Yes, that's what I was trying to say. Imowen.
But yeah, I mean, there was another game too that's come
Icewind Dale.
Yeah, and then there was Age of Decadence, I think it's called, where you.
But there's a new Icewind Dale game.
No, it's a game. Sorry, it's an isometric game. Another one, an RPG.
Turn-based?
But on Steam, it's called Age of Decadence.
Oh, and I think we covered that on Game Watcher. I'm pretty sure of it.
Well, we haven't talked about it on this show at all.
Okay.
And it basically you don't have to do fighting. You know, fighting can be like the last thing you do. You have these. You could be like a merchant, for instance, as from what I've read, and you're doing these deals to get what you need or want instead of fighting. You know, so that the game gives you real options to solving your problems.
Aside, we reviewed it. I mean, it came out in October, but we didn't review it. Oh well.
So I'm putting that in the gallery of recent isometric games that have come out that are RPGs, and
it's also pretty.
Oh yeah! Oh, looks great. Yes.
But taking a larger view of this, I mean, Kickstarter. See, here's the thing: a lot of genres die, quote unquote, and companies think that no one wants to play them because no one bought them. You know, and we're gonna look at adventure games. I mean. Before Kickstarter, you know, Telltale proved that, hey, people do want to play adventure games, you know. And one of the biggest genres in the 80s and 90s, quote-unquote,
was
died.
Adventure, yeah. Remember Sierra?
No. I mean, not the adventure. I mean, but I'm talking about space combat games like Wing Commander and Freelancer. And you did not see a single hint of those games in the aughts. Then when Kickstarter came around, oh, look, Star Citizen, how much money have they made now? $100 million in crowdfunding? You know? So, yeah, there is a hunger for these games, and what the point I'm trying to make is that Kickstarter proves, and other crowdfunding, that people do want to play adventure games. They do want to play space combat games. They do want to play platform games, you know?
It's just that, you know, I think these corporations, and by the way, I think Beamdog has corporate backing, or at least...
Well, they proved... Well, here's the thing. They proved, with their own Kickstarter project, that people wanted to play Baldur's Gate again, you know?
Yeah. Pillars, and yeah. But I do think Beamdog has corporate backing, but it's these corporations got, like, so focused on the bottom line that if it wasn't making a certain amount of money, it was just not worth making, you know? And I think that really hurts artistic talent.
EA learned their lesson, though. I mean, they decided, you know what, we're going to make the Mirror's Edge sequel, because even though it only made $1 million, and it was, I don't even know if it sold $1 million, actually. Anyway, but it didn't sell that well, and it got mediocre reviews, but they said, you know what, this is interesting enough that we're going to keep with it. It reminds me of the story of Cheers, the television show. Yeah. In its first year, 1982, was dead last. And those who were lucky to watch it thought it was something special. Brandon Tartikoff said, we're not going to cancel it. We're going to wait and wait for it to get its own audience. And then it was lucky enough to be sandwiched between The Cosby Show, Family Ties, and Night Court. And it became the most powerful Thursday night ever in the history of television. And, you know, so the thing is that you have to be able to accept, you know, people may not catch on right away because it's new. I'll give you another example, Assassin's Creed. That did not sell very well. And then Assassin's Creed 2 came, and boom, it just started. You know, you have to give things a chance to breathe. And I don't think, you know, it isn't that they're not imaginative, they're not patient enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, like with Mirror's Edge especially, it's a very specific kind of game with a very specific kind of style. And it did have that sort of following of people that are like, if you don't like this game, then you're just not seeing it properly. And I don't know.
Oh, God. I just realized, can you imagine playing a game like Mirror's Edge with VR? You wouldn't stop throwing up.
Oh, no.
You would not stop throwing up. People were throwing up without the VR. That's why they had that little dot in the middle that you were supposed to keep focused on so you didn't get sick.
Good luck with that.
I have Mirror's Edge because, you know, EA gave it away for free on Origin. So, I mean, maybe I'll get back into it. I still haven't gotten back into Brutal Legend. You know, I really have to give that game a chance. But right now, all my brain is surrounding XCOM 2. And it's one of those games that I'm pretty sure everybody's had that in which they go to work and all they can think about is what they're going to do next in that particular game.
Yeah, that was Fallout 4. I would go to work and just think about the next mission I was going to do when I got home.
Then you really know a game's captured you when you start dreaming about it. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was in high school, I dreamt about Sid Meier's Pirates. I dreamt about playing it.
True story. I was on when I was playing Civ 5 a lot. One night, my wife said I like leaned over to her and
told her had nuclear weapons and their words were backed by nuclear weapons.
No, I told her in my sleep. They haven't accepted my religion yet, but I have tanks, so it'll be okay.
You dreamt of Gandhi saying...
That sounds like Civ 5.
You dreamt of Gandhi telling you that his words are backed with nuclear weapons!
Yep.
We're going to move on to the next item. New rumor has Forza Motorsport 6 and Forza Horizon 3 coming to Windows 10. This comes to us from Game Watcher. Gears of War 2 had been rumored to be coming to Windows 10, but some new scuttlebutt has arisen that Microsoft's flagship racers, Forza Motorsport 6 and Forza Horizon 3... will be headed to PC as well. The rumor comes courtesy of the Chinese news site WP Dang, which claimed that a source told them that Windows 10 versions of those games, of Forza Horizon 3, which has not yet, by the way, been officially announced yet for the Xbox One, even though it's one of those open secrets You know, it's like everybody knows it's coming. We're just waiting for the official announcement. And Halo Wars 2 are being added to the Windows Microsoft 10 store. The Windows 10 store, as well as Forza Motorsport 6, which will be given a special edition treatment on its alleged PC launch. This rumor has credence, since many Xbox One exclusives have been announced on Windows 10, including ReCore and Quantum Break, which is going to actually have a same-day release as the Xbox One version. Microsoft is obviously recommitting itself to PC games, although part of it is in service to Windows 10 and the Microsoft Store. And here's the thing. They don't expect Quantum Break to sell well on Windows 10 because the system specs are extremely high. You have to have a monster PC. They're requiring you have DirectX 12.
What kind of game is Quantum Break?
It's a third-person action game with time manipulation. And it's being done by Remedy, which is why a lot of people are excited, because they're the same guys who did Max Payne and Alan Wake.
Yeah. You know,
they always do really, really beautiful games.
So lots of bullet time?
Well, sorta. You are manipulating time.
Yeah.
It's like that... Oh, jeez, I forgot the name of that. Do you remember the game that was set in Russia, which had a time manipulation in which you could age things or make them younger with a gun? Oh, I forgot the name of it. It began with an R. Anyways. So here's the thing, is that Microsoft is trying to make the PC and Xbox One inseparable, because the other thing about these games is that the save files and the achievements are for both editions. So the achievements you earn on the PC are automatically for the Xbox One version, and the save files from each of them work for each of them. You know, it's cross-platform, like Sony's been doing for years with the PlayStation and whatever handheld, the PSP and the Vita.
So that actually makes sense to do, because that's what I've been kind of complaining about with Sony and not doing the PlayStation 3 to 4 to, you know, backwards compatibility. And if Microsoft is making sure that a game is playable on both platforms and can be connected.
Well, the save files are on both platforms. Although it does ruin something I used to do. I mean, I rented Batman Arkham Asylum for the Xbox 360, gained all the achievements for that. Then I bought it for the PC, which was and I got all the PC achievements for that. So I doubled my achievements for playing the same game on two different machines.
Yeah,
I can't do that anymore.
Oh.
Sad.
And backwards compatibility for the Xbox One is a great thing. I mean, PlayStation Now is an awful system.
Also, EA Access is also really, really big, and Sony has to get away from PlayStation Now and adopt EA Access, because now they have Origin Access, which is the same thing except for PC games. You know, and one of the big EA games is coming this coming week, for me at least, it's Garden Warfare 2, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah.
And that, you know, 5 days in advance, you get to play that game, you know, for free. And then when you decide to buy it, 10% off, and everything that you did in the game stays with the game. I hate being a shill for EA like this, but it's true. It's a good service. And one of the funniest things is that people are whining about, the Xbox One isn't having any exclusives. Well, here's the fact. A lot of people are going to buy the Xbox One versions of these games if they have the Xbox One. You know, and Microsoft is selling it on their store, so they're not going to lose penny. They're not going to lose a penny if you buy it for the PC. And the other thing is that I'm pretty sure Microsoft is thinking, well, you know what? When a PlayStation owner plays these games on PC, you know what they're going to see? The big Microsoft logo coming up basically saying, hey, look how great our stuff is.
Yeah.
You know? So why don't you also play the console version of this too? So it's basically advertising too. And, you know... And they also want to strengthen up Windows 10. I mean, the free Windows 10 is passed now. You now have to pay for it. I don't have to pay for it, thankfully. So, you know, they have to get people a reason to upgrade to Windows 10. And, you know, everybody's really suspicious of every Windows that comes out now, they're suspicious of, because they think it's going to be another Windows Vista.
Yeah.
Or Windows 8, which people don't like.
Yeah, I actually upgraded to Windows 10, I guess, just in time. And I did see an option to go back to Windows 7. I was looking in the control panel, and I actually had a backup and restore Windows 7. Yeah. So it surprised me that option was in there.
Basically, what they did was they took Windows 7, and they just put Windows 8 in the toolbar. So you now have all those boxes when you click on the Windows icon, which is good. I mean, I like that. I mean, navigation.
And you can modify those boxes and take out whatever you don't want.
The funniest thing to me is that the search engine in Windows 10 is Cortana. And spoilers here for Windows 5. For Halo 5, spoiler, Cortana takes over the universe. And I'm thinking, oh God, I just put Skynet on my computer here.
Oh no.
Cortana is on my computer, and when she
I think dessert, somebody's having a little tongue-in-cheek moment and having a little fun there.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead. This is Scott. No, wait, this is DJ.
Okay. Id Software. Doom Reboot single-player campaign will be around 13 hours from Game Watcher. Doom is one game in which the single-player has always been as important as its multiplayer. Id Software revealed in a tweet that the campaign for the upcoming reboot will be around 13 hours. The developer answered a fan's question about the campaign's length, saying the difficulty level plays a factor, but folks playing at the office average 13-plus hours in the campaign. That's not to say that Doom will be lacking in multiplayer. Id Software showed it off its splattery multiplayer modes last September 2015. Doom is due to be released this coming May.
So, yeah, here's the thing. I didn't like Doom 3 at all. And, you know, I know a lot of people didn't, because I call it Monster Closet Doom 3. Doom has never been really known for its multiplayer. I mean, it's known for originating the deathmatch, right?
Right.
But it's always been Quake that's led the way for Id in terms of multiplayer.
Right. And, I mean, I didn't necessarily know Doom for its single player. I just, campaign or so-called story. I just knew it for the fact that it was a really, really fun game to play through as far as just a single player experience. Yeah.
Remember, because when you heard those hoof noises, you knew that, oh, shoot, I forgot. It's not a Caco demon. It's, what were the demons which were these walking goat monsters? Anyway, but when you heard their clocking, the clocking of their feet, you said, oh, shit, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, there was a... Well, I know they just call the cyber version the cyber demon, but...
It might be the cyber demon.
I remember getting scared at the beholders.
Those are Caco demons.
Oh, I thought the Caco demon was the brown one with the spikes.
I thought the Caco demons were those pink things, which were balls that attacked you.
Balls? Oh, okay. I was thinking you were talking about that giant minotaur thing.
No. The Caco demon is the glowing the ball that chases you around. It isn't a giant thing. The only giant monster I remember is in the finale for Duke Nukem. Duke Nukem 3D.
There were several giant demons in Doom. There was the big spider thing, the spider brain. There was the big minotaur thing that had like rocket launchers, and then there's that tall, skinny thing.
Yeah, the cyber demons were the ones. They had ram's heads, not goat heads, and they're the ones you could hear clocking along, you know.
So Caco Demon was the round, like, red ball with the spikes on its head?
Yeah, the pink ball with horns.
And then the pink dudes running around, like, on their actual feet were just called regular demons.
Oh,
they
were cyber demons.
The cyber demon is the big goat dude with the cybernetic enhancements, and the one that doesn't have cybernetic enhancements is the Baron of Hell.
Okay. You know, I played Quake more than I played Doom. And I remember that because the Trent Reznor's theme of the original Quake is still burning in my brain. You know,
mm-hmm.
I still have the Quake 2 entire soundtrack sitting around somewhere on my computer.
I have the Duke Nukem unofficial expansion that was pulled because it was illegal, but I still have it, and I forgot the name of it. I also have the Diablo Hellfire expansion too, which was also pulled as well. You weren't supposed to have it.
The important thing though about a Doom single player campaign isn't necessarily that it like has something intriguing as far as story goes. It just needs to keep ramping
it
up.
It needs to be Serious Sam, basically.
Yeah, it needs to ramp it up and be ridiculous and crazy and keep introducing you to things that are going to be like, oh my God. That's what a Doom campaign is.
Yeah.
I skipped Doom 2, and I know that it was it was supposed to be the hardest of them all. It was
a very surreal game. If you could get to the ending and you
was
beat
Doom Blastowitz? Was Blastowitz in Doom or was no? That was Wolfenstein.
If you beat the last thing, I think it was a giant brain or something, but you can get into this room, and there's this spike with a guy's head on it, and like that's the last thing you see.
It's John A. Romero's head.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I had no idea. You know, Cliffy B. is hidden in Doom as well somewhere. I forgot what it was.
Basically, the way to actually beat Doom is you find a secret room, and it's John Romero's head, and you kill it.
You know, Doom's protagonist doesn't have a name. He's just Doom Marine.
I always knew him as Doom Guy.
Or Doom Guy. Yeah, it's Blastowitz who was in Wolfenstein. Right. I still haven't played those new Wolfenstein games. You know, the really new ones that everybody's been raving about. You know, the one in which you're in a train and these two Nazis test you out and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I haven't played that. Oh, God. You know, sorry, Homeland sucks. Or Homefront sucks. Just the entire thing that North Korea is going to attack us. No matter what, North Korea can't attack us. It's not going to happen. For one thing, they're incapable. Even if we have an EMP that takes out all our... They're incapable of doing it. Two, Europe's not going to sit around and let them do it. You know? The thing is that, you know why Homefront... The enemies are the North Koreans? Because they won't be able to sell the game if they're the Chinese.
Right.
And that's the main reason why. That's why we have... You know they just announced Transformers 5, 6, and 7 and dated them for 2017, 2018, and 2019?
Damn.
That's what the Chinese are doing because they're watching our movies. They love $1 billion from China for watching Transformers. And now we know what the French feel like every time one of our big blockbusters goes there. It's like the French are like, oh my God, we have to do another Die Hard 5? What is it? And, you know,
that's
it's
not
like...
French, but okay.
Anyways, and now, you know, it's like we're going, oh no, another Transformers.
Well, it's kind of like also, you know, zombie apocalypse isn't going to happen, but they keep redoing the story of zombies because they feel like it, so they're going to do whatever they're going to do, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, it's fine. I mean, you know, here's the thing. At least if the stories are good, I don't care, you know? The Walking Dead is good. Other movies which had zombies are bad, you know, and we don't want to. You know, it's any story can be palatable so long as it's well written and well acted. You know,
the problem was that
I mean there were about 8 Krampus movies that came out, but the one Krampus movie I forgot the director's name that came out was really really good. It's like a throwback to the 80s horror movies like Gremlins, you know, and the Jim Henson horror movies.
The biggest problem is not that a certain genre can't be written well, it's that so many people write it badly that's what you think about when you look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger did a movie about called Maggie, in which he just played a dad whose daughter is zombified, which is getting worse and worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of that, that's the zombie equivalent of That Dragon Cancer.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, is. He has to watch his daughter slowly zombify. Mm-hmm. And he keeps on telling everybody to screw off. He'll take care of her, but obviously he can't. Which, okay, but the movie itself is basically an analogy for people having to learn to let go of dying loved ones, you know. So I guess Wow, we just compared a movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger to That Dragon Cancer.
Yeah.
Did you ever think you could do that?
That's fine with me. I mean, I thought that, both. That movie and that game sound like they're hitting those emotional chords.
Like I said, watch the trailer. You don't have to play the game. Anyways, the question of the week is pretty on the nose. It is, what is your favorite first-person shooter? Go ahead, TJ. What is your favorite first-person shooter of all time?
I was thinking about this for a while before we started this up, and I think off the top of my head... I keep thinking back to this little one that came out a while ago called Black.
Oh, yes. And that had several editions.
Yeah, it wasn't like the biggest game. It didn't get that much success, but oh my gosh, it was so fun.
Wasn't it? I remember the big thing about Black was its sound effects, and
it was one of those games that was going to be that was touted as this is going to be a Halo killer, and of course
there's a lot of Halo killers, including the first Halo killer was by Halo itself. Does anybody remember Brute Force?
Yes, I remember Brute
that
Force.
That was such a disappointment.
Oh yeah.
Responding to the whole idea of fill in the blank game killer. Why do people think that you're going to only play one game? Like, you can't go and play other games?
But, well, no, here's the thing is that they're saying it's going to replace that game from the top of its type of genre. And it's an incredibly narrow genre, too. I mean, you have Half-Life killers, you have Halo killers, you have Doom killers. Actually, you don't have Doom killers. They're always Doom clones.
Yeah.
And basically, what they're going for.
For a long while, by the way, every single shooter was quote unquote a Doom clone.
What they're going for is that this is a game that changed the landscape when it came out, and so they want to match that, like, magnitude.
Yeah.
I mean, Halo was indeed a. You know, Halo might be one of the most important games. I don't. It may not. You could say that Halo sucks, right? I don't, but I'm just saying. Someone could say Halo sucks, but they can't deny that it actually sold an entire console series.
Yeah, definitely did.
You know, without Halo, the Xbox would have just been a pippin.
For my favorite FPS, I'll just say Fallout 4.
That's an RPG. Now, here's the thing. I'm not going to allow Fallout 4. I'm not going to allow Deus Ex. I'm not going to allow System Shock 2. I'm not allowing any shooters that have role-playing elements. You can't level yourself up. You can't, you know, no, just a plain old shooter. You know,
I don't really have one done.
Quake slash
Duke. I get 3D. Bored of those very quickly.
Yeah, but, you know, you still have a favorite, don't you?
I guess Doom 1, the original Doom.
Original Doom. Okay, I'm going to go with, and I know this is low-hanging fruit, but I'm going to go with Half-Life, because that changed everything for me when it came to shooters. I could not believe what I was playing. I mean, I would hide, and they would chuck grenades in my direction to try and flush me out, you know?
Yeah.
And that was so disappointing with Half-Life 2, by the way. Whatever, it just seemed like they were dumber, and they would just run straight at you, or take cover, and that was it. You know, and followed closely by Halo, because the AI in that was incredible as well.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know, for my favorite storyless shooter, and I really, it does have a story, but it's not quite a story. And actually, maybe it even surpasses Half-Life as my favorite shooter, and that's the original Unreal Tournament.
You can't go wrong with that. That was
I made maps. That game actually made me do Unreal Ed maps, and one of the best thing to do was to make a map, do all the path nodes, and then have a zero player match of 16 players, which meant the AI was controlling all the players, and they were all fighting each other, and you really got to see the AI in question. One of the best things that I loved about Unreal Tournament when I was watching these bot matches, when it was playing itself, was that when a bot came close to a blind intersection or corner, it would actually slow down, hunch down, and approach that corner with caution because there could be someone on the other side. And that blew my mind.
I will give an honorary mention, Killzone. The original Killzone it was absurdly good. It was that. When we talk about Halo killers, that actually was, like, I was a PS2 person. I never got an Xbox. I never got the original Xbox. I had friends that had it.
I was a Halo killer if you didn't play on the Xbox.
Yeah, so when I played Killzone, it was literally like, I saw from the very beginning, this is going to be a franchise that goes on forever, and they've made 4 of them at this point.
Yeah, the last one was a complete and utter bomb on the PS4.
Yeah,
It was the one that was set in the city, and you had 2 different factions.
But that first one was just absurdly good as far as just a sci-fi shooter.
Okay. Now, let me ask you a question now. What was your favorite multiplayer in a shooter? You don't have to answer this, TJ. I mean, you don't have to answer this, Scott. I'm sorry. I'll remain with Unreal Tournament, even though Halo comes close behind. Although, I will say this, although technically it's not a... Garden Warfare is just a third-person shooter, so it doesn't really count. But I will say that that has the best Battlefield-style multiplayer that I've seen in any game. And, you know, a lot of people want to play these multi, but they're turned off by the military stuff, and it's all too, quote-unquote, serious. I mean, people can be serious about playing Garden Warfare, but it's hard to be serious when you're playing as a bean sprout, or as a zombie, or as a sunflower, you know? Or in Garden Warfare 2's equivalent, you know, being an orange that punches people. You know, it's hard to be too, you know, it allows people not to take the game that seriously, even though they're playing it seriously, you know?
Yeah. Multiplayer shooter?
Well, multiplayer mode in a shooter.
No. I would say Call of Duty Black Ops, the first one. That was the first one that I felt like, for me, a lot of the Call of Duty games have felt arcadey. They felt
cheap. Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare, was the first one to give you points for everything that you did. Oh, you helped a teammate. Here are some points. Oh, you distracted the other player. Here are some points, you know. And it kept on giving you all this rewards for everything that you were doing that you really felt involved. And every single multiplayer shooter since has done that.
Yeah. What really put Call of Duty Black Ops apart for me is that almost every one of those shooters has felt arcadey. They feel cheap. It feels just like a sort of, I don't even know how to explain,
you don't
it other
create
than
the
it just
battlefield.
Yeah, yeah. And Black Ops was the first one I've played, and probably one of the last ones I've played in a long time. I don't even think Black Ops 2 or Black Ops 3 were as good as the first one, where you just every bullet feels like it has impact, and that was a really cool immersive feel for me.
You know, you have to still, you know, for Halo. Remember, Halo for a long while was an Xbox only game, right? And it had multiplayer, but you had to have a LAN.
Yeah.
And what people had to do to play online was get the GameSpy tunnel to be able to trick the Xbox One, the original Xbox. And when I say the Xbox One, I mean the Xbox first one, to think it was in a LAN when it was actually online gameplay. And the lengths at which people went to do that sort of indicated that, yeah, Halo's multiplayer is going to be big. And people still think that Halo 2's matchmaking is better than any game ever since. No one's ever topped it. And I tend to agree, because matchmaking in games these years are so craptastic. You'd think they would have just, you know, here, copy and paste what they did with Halo 2. Just do that. And people don't want to do that. It's like, you know, you can't break something you can't fix something that's not broken.
Yeah. And I think it's there is no excuse for it. They really just, they try to do their own thing, and nothing is as good as that original, but they keep trying new things and that just don't work.
I'd rather be called a copycat than do something crappy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, here's the thing. Everybody says, well, the Xbox controller, not the original Duke, although I love the Duke, you know, the big fat, you know. I'm talking about the Xbox 360 control. Oh, it just copied the PlayStation control. Yeah, but it made it better. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to copy, make it better, you know. And I don't see
the difference. I've used both controllers. They're
the PlayStation controller has both thumbsticks down, which feels
unnatural. Yeah, and it doesn't matter to me. I can do it up, down, crisscross, whatever. I don't care.
I want to get to Halo Elite. You know, I felt it, I played with it at E3, and I was instantly hooked. And if you're going to get a $150 controller, yeah, you know. The thing I hear about it is also extremely sturdy, which is a good thing if it's going to be $150. Because getting a controller for $150 is an investment.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, we'd like to hear from you. What is your favorite first-person shooter? Notice I did not say third-person shooter. So I guess you can't say things like Max Payne or what are the third-person shooters?
Oh, come on. Gears of War?
Gears of War, that's the other one, yeah. the thing I was thinking is was the original Tomb Raider a third-person shooter or just a third-person action adventure? Because you have shooting, but no, I'm not going to count it as a
shooter. That was definitely third-person, whichever one you want to call it. It was definitely third-person.
And I have to say, you know, Rise of the Tomb Raider, it is the best Tomb Raider since the original. I think I said that last week, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm repeating myself. And I'm not a huge Tomb Raider fan either. I only played the first one and a little bit of the second one. You know, I'm still trying to get through the most recent two. But there's just so much time, and there's something called XCOM 2 that's taking up all my time. So, yeah. So let us know. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forums, or send your comments to fans at gamingpodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave some iTunes comments. That's the most important of all. I have not checked the iTunes comments in a while. I'm going to see if there's any new ones. And if there's any new iTunes comments, I'm going to read them out on the podcast. So you get to be a star in front of a dozen other people, you know. You can reach me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon. You can reach Scott at @AlphaShard. And I know yours is something Chubb, and I'm trying to remember what it is.
At Johnny Chugs, that's capital J, capital C, J, capital J-O-H-N-N-Y, capital C-H-U-G-S.
Well, there you go. And he chugs a lot. Johnny chugs a lot. You know, that should be the name of, you know, I'm pretty sure that's probably one of the hot sauce bottles in Nashville. God, they have a lot of weird hot sauces in Nashville.
I'm going to have to copyright my thing and then sue them.
There's Tijuana Flats. They do a lot of hot sauces as well.
Yeah. Actually, the funny thing is that I did not come away with any hot sauce when I was in Nashville for the MSD, or not, I mean the Riff Tracks Live. I actually came away with some really expensive teriyaki. And I made some teriyaki beef with teriyaki rice. It was magnificent.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I was a latchkey kid. All my life. So I learned how to cook. When I was 10 years old, I knew how to make key lime pie and coconut custard pie and all that stuff. So, yeah. The thing is that I'm single and have no one to cook for.
Cook for yourself.
Sad. Yeah, no, you see, I don't like to cook for myself. I like to cook for other people, damn it. Cooking for myself is like drinking by yourself. It's boring, you know. I want to please someone with,
Well, then take your food down to a homeless shelter or something.
That's not... I'm not going to have sex with a homeless person.
I didn't say sex. Is it food?
I'm pretty sure it's nice and all that. No, well, you have to have your reward after cooking for someone, don't you?
Oh, wow. Okay. I see.
I hope you're not taking me seriously. These are the jokes, folks. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have a good one.
And stop. Okay, I'm going to hang up just to make sure this saves. So, see you next week.